So I go and I go and I challenge the Geek Gab to a voting battle, and Dave has to go and tell all his listeners to go and vote for the Roundup 2. Always has to do the classy thing, that Dave Hamilton. Today is July 8th, 2006, and this is the Weekly Roundup, a Mac Observer podcast. I'm Ricky Spiro. If you're listening for the first time to this show, maybe a listener of the Geek Gab or another show that's moved over to this show wants to hear what's going on, welcome. Welcome to the Weekly Roundup. We do things a little bit differently here on this show, but I sure hope you dig it. To get the full story on anything we cover in this show, you can visit the show notes at macobserver.com/roundup. I'm back from vacation and ready to boogie. Now, we spent a lot of time on Microsoft last week. This week's top story is also about Microsoft, but this time we're looking forward rather than back into history. So I have just one question. Can a brother get an iPod killer in here? Microsoft may be working to release a portable MP3 player to compete with the iPod in time for the Christmas buying season. The player will include a Wi-Fi wireless network connection so that songs can be downloaded from the internet without requiring a computer, and a better screen than the iPod. The stars behind the Xbox, Robbie Bach and Jay Allard, are said to be heading up the project, and music industry executive Chris Stevenson is working to strike deals with music and movie companies. Microsoft will also roll out a new service to deliver the content Mr. Stevenson secures, a move that will put the company in direct competition with its music subscription service partner, MTV. The two companies are currently working together on the Windows-only Urge music service. Of course, you may have noticed that Apple and MTV, who are competitors in the music downloading business, are also partners. MTV has provided exclusive content to iTunes, both TV stuff and otherwise. Last month, Microsoft denied reports that it was co-developing a multimedia device to compete with the iPod in the Japanese market. Earlier in the year, however, Microsoft's Steve Ballmer said the company will do what it takes to take market share from the iPod. Now, I'd been planning to sideline this story, that is, in translation, ignore it, until an Engadget report that Microsoft was planning to offer iPod owners free downloads of all the music they have purchased from the iTunes Music Store to date. Now, according to the report, Microsoft's software will scan your computer for tracks you purchased from iTunes and automatically add them to your account. This assumes, of course, that Microsoft's music service will offer everything that Apple's does. And iTunes currently has some exclusive content. Presumably it will continue to have some exclusive content. Now, of course, Microsoft will still have to pay the license holders for the music it's giving away for free. Of course, in the past, Microsoft has used this kind of loss leader approach with both Internet Explorer and with the Xbox. Internet Explorer it gave away for free, the Xbox it sold below cost. So I decided to make this the week's top story, and then Microsoft went and responded to the rumors, saying that the reports are just speculation. Now, Microsoft's representatives, what they actually said, they said the company didn't, quote, have anything to announce at this time. What does that mean? Sounds like a very wordy version of no comment to me. Now, I've got two other bits of context machine fodder this week. First, Apple Computer announced Wednesday that the company has been hit with two lawsuits relating to the way the company has handled stock options. According to a statement issued by Apple, the suits include claims against both current and former officers and directors regarding the way options have been managed within the company. One suit was filed in the United States District Court for the Northern District of California, a federal court, and the second was filed in the California Superior Court for Santa Clara County. Apple announced on June 29, 2006, it had found irregularities in some stock option grants and that it had hired independent counsels to investigate the matter further. The company also said it had informed the SEC of the situation. After that announcement, American technology research analyst Sha Wu and Piper Jaffray analyst Gene Munster issued research reports in which they both concluded that Apple's investigation into the previously issued stock grants is unlikely to have any major impact on the company. Apple's usual policy, of course, is to not comment on ongoing litigation, but this week the company said in a statement that it is currently evaluating its response to the lawsuits. And finally, in a truly bizarre story, last week, that came up this last week, National Semiconductor gave employees 30 gigabyte iPods to celebrate its most successful year ever. This month, it's asking laid off employees to return theirs. The company says the iPods aren't the property of employees, but it seems that's not the impression it made when giving them out. Apparently, employees that leave the company are expected to return their iPods or pay fair market value for it. For employees that are leaving, however, this news comes as something of a surprise. Some have already sold theirs or given them away as gifts. Oops. So, joining me this week to talk about Microsoft, to talk about big companies doing dumb things with their employees, the morning editor and the new reviews editor at TMO as well, Jeff Gamet. Welcome back.
It's great to be here. And just so you know, I love talking about stupid things companies do.
All right, let's start talking about Microsoft. There may be some stupid things that they're doing in here. First of all, this music player. So there were rumors, and then they were denied, and then there were more rumors, and they were denied. And is this music player from Microsoft a real product or not?
Well, keeping in mind that my crystal ball is still in the shop, I'm going to say yes, it's a real product. Yeah, I think it is.
Now, why are you inclined to believe that?
I'm inclined to believe it because Microsoft doesn't like being in second place. And right now in the portable media market, they're not even close to second place. So this is a very lucrative market, and it's going to continue being one for quite a while, I think. So they need to get into it now. If they wait too much longer, it will be too late for them.
That makes sense to me. My inclination is to believe it's a real product as well. One of the reasons last week Brian was on the show talking about historically how Microsoft has dealt with new markets. The music and media online marketplace is a new marketplace. And one of Brian's tirades about Microsoft is that any time a new market develops, Microsoft's reaction is we have to control this market. And so they're independent of the music player market, clearly Microsoft does not control the format market either. The WMA is second to Apple's AAC and Fairplay standard. And so my inclination is that the reaction from Microsoft is what we're doing now isn't working to control the multimedia marketplace, the new online digital media marketplace. So we've got to fix that. And right now, the only business model that's succeeding is Apple's, the music player and the music store. So presumably Microsoft would jump on that bandwagon. That's my inclination as well. But this is what confuses me, and I'm curious what you think about this. If it is a real product, why is Microsoft kind of half denying it? They're really not denying it. They're just not saying anything. They're saying, we have nothing to announce at this time.
Right.
Why would they bother to make those comments?
I think it's feeding the hype, and that's something they need right now, is the hype to go along with the product. If you look at their last big product hype, which was Origami, and which ultimately had a very sad ending because it turned out to be pretty crappy overall, but I digress.
I like that you've called it an ending. Meaning that when they announced the product, that was the end of the whole thing. It's done.
That pretty much wrapped it up right there. Yeah. Right now they need to have the hype. And they did a really good job of building up hype around Origami. And they're doing it again now. And in one respect, I think they're building their hype in a really smart way. They're playing the coy little developer, saying, well, geez, you know, we're really not sure what you're talking about. And it's driving up speculation. I mean, if you look over the last couple of weeks at how many analyst reports and news articles have come out about this mythical product that no one has even seen yet, it's amazing.
Now, it is really interesting to me. If I imagine myself a student of public relations and I was studying Apple and I was studying Microsoft, it seems that the first rule at Apple when it comes to public relations is don't say anything. If people are talking about a product, let them talk. We'll say what we want to say when we want to say it. And unless there's something that they deem either a crisis or a potential crisis, like, for example, the reports about sweatshop labor or the thing with stock options, which we'll talk about in a minute, it's very rare for Apple to preemptively make an announcement about commentary or rumors or news reports that are out there. They just make their official statement and then they say nothing and let people say whatever they want. Do you think it's a mistake for Microsoft to not follow that formula, or do you think that this other formula is equally good or better? How would you compare the Microsoft formula of neither confirming nor denying versus Apple's total radio silence?
I think Microsoft would actually really like to do, at least with this product, what Apple is doing. But they're Microsoft, and it's a big company, and there's a lot of things that are set and have to be done a certain way. So right now they're just mixing it up a little bit as best as they can. So neither the confirming or denial, that really was hard to say. That's working for them right now. I think they really would love to be able to pull the Apple stance of we say nothing, but they really can't do that.
Yeah, and it is remarkable how difficult that is for a firm to do. And it's one of those things, you watch a big company like Microsoft or any other firm try to maintain secrecy. There's no other company that I know of off the top of my head that does it the way Apple does. And it's quite extraordinary when you see a company attempt to do it and somehow flounder in that process.
Yes. Well, and if you look at it historically, it's amazing that Apple can do it, because they used to be one of the most open companies with their leaks. I mean, some of them would come right from Steve Jobs back in the old days.
Now, let's get back into the news part of this. What are your thoughts on this potential plan to give away Windows Media versions of songs that customers have already downloaded from iTunes?
You know, I'm kind of mixed on that one. It sounds like a really good idea, but I don't know if it's really something Microsoft is thinking about doing, or if that has just kind of festered up out of this whole rumor mill.
It is, again, it's one of these things that this is the comment that caught my eye and caused me to make this the week's top story. That seems like the critical step in making WMA viable. If for people who have music players who have been downloading from iTunes, the only argument I can imagine someone making to those people in order to get them to switch to WMA is, here, we'll give you everything you already have. Try our product.
You know, that's a really smart thing to do. And Microsoft has played the let's buy the market card before, and it worked really well with the Xbox. So there's no reason why they wouldn't do it again.
Now, in this case, do we have any idea how much it would cost Microsoft to do this?
I believe the technical term is an ass load. Is it okay to say that in a podcast?
Sure.
Okay.
The FCC doesn't regulate us, I suppose.
Excellent. Well, then we got to use the technical term. Great. No, I think what it would come down to is, can they actually license from the recording studios everything Apple already has? Because they're going to have to do that if they're promising to give everyone all of the music they already have purchased from iTunes. And it wouldn't cost them as much, I think, as it would to just buy each song outright, because they would probably swing a deal with recording studios where they get like some type of discount, I would bet.
And presumably the studios themselves have an interest in creating, in making WMA a viable competitor, because many of the studios have expressed a lot of frustration that they're dealing exclusively with Apple, that Apple right now is the thin pipe through which every single studio has to go in order to sell their music online.
Yes, that's true. Now, when you think about it, it's not necessarily a bad thing that it's working that way right now. It's, I think, just a side effect of the market. No one else has been able to produce a product that works as well as what Apple offers. So why would you go somewhere else when you can go to Apple and have the best distribution system?
Now, I suppose, working on the back of an envelope here, it's worth pointing out, Apple has apparently sold a little over a billion songs through the iTunes Music Store. If we imagine that everyone who has bought music through the iTunes Music Store has gone to or wanted to try out Microsoft's mythical music service and get these free songs, Apple pays something like, or the standard relationship is that the distributor, the online music store owner, pays something like 60 or 70 cents on the dollar for each dollar of songs sold. So if we were to imagine a billion songs sold, we're talking on the order of $700-800 million in the worst case scenario. So it's still less than $1 billion we can imagine if everyone from iTunes went to take this free song deal. I don't suppose you have any idea how much cash Microsoft has on hand these days.
Off the top of my head, no, but I do know that it's double-digit billions.
So more than $10 million, which is an order of magnitude higher than the worst-case scenario here. So it's not unreasonable. It's a lot of money, but it's not an unreasonable thing to imagine Microsoft trying to do.
I agree. Yes, it is a lot of money, and they would see it on the bottom line probably for a few quarters, but it's not something they couldn't rebound from.
Now, let's move on and talk about this stock options story coming out of Apple. Now, Apple's already admitted that it did something wrong. How do you expect this situation to play out?
You know, the whole stock option thing, since they fessed up right away and said, hey, this is what's going on. We've already hired independent counsel to do an audit and figure out what went wrong. I think that was a really smart move.
First rule of damage control, you get the entire story out on the first day.
Yes, and you get it out the way you want it to go out. And they did, and that was a really good thing. And I think in the long run, this will become a non-issue. Because,
Now, it seems likely that this sort of thing, assuming that they did something wrong, and presumably they did if they've gone to all this trouble, it seems likely, at least to me, that this will end in some kind of settlement that's not, you know, going to break Apple, but results in some settlement for the shareholders.
Probably.
And, all right.
Yeah, I'm sure someone's going to be paying someone back some money out of this. Yes.
All right. And incidentally, it might be, if it's not Apple, then it might be some of the people that receive these stock options. But we
yes.
can't be sure.
Yeah, I think it's likely that there may be some of the board members or someone else that received a stock option that ultimately is going to say, whoops, my bad, here, have some money back. And it'll turn into a really good PR thing for Apple, because they'll be able to say, look how transparent we run our company. Which is ironic, considering how secretive they are.
Right, exactly. Now, different subject, pop quiz. We're going to play this game that I like to play occasionally. Let's imagine that you're in charge of a large solid-state electronics firm. Let's say it's called National Semiconductor, just to pull a name out of a hat. Let's say that you had a great year of business, and you decide to reward your employees. Do you A, give them an iPod, B, let them borrow an iPod, or the third thing that I can think of as a potential intelligent thing to do is to lead them to believe that you're giving them an iPod, then lay some of them off and ask for their iPods back.
You know, what I would do is lead people to believe that I'm giving them an iPod, lay them off, ask for the iPod back, kick them in the shin, and then pull their daughter's pigtails. That's what I would do.
What is going on here? Why? How did this happen?
You know, I think what this comes down to is a major PR screw up on this on National Semiconductor's part. I don't think they ever intended to let the employees keep the iPods, but they certainly did nothing to make us think otherwise. And they certainly didn't do anything to make the employees think otherwise either.
Which, and it's one of these things, if it were just people on blogs saying, oh, that's nice, you gave them iPods, now you're taking them away. Apparently people in the company were sufficiently confused about the ownership of these iPods to give them away or to sell them. I mean, that's pretty surprising.
Yes, and yeah, they did nothing, it appears. They did nothing to let any of the employees know that this was not a gift, like they were led to believe, but instead merely another business tool, like a company cell phone or a company laptop.
Now, the impression from certainly the original article we carried about how they were being given iPods, was that these were intended as rewards for what had happened in the previous year. Is what reason did we have to believe that when we ran that article originally?
Well, the reason we had to believe that was because that's exactly what National Semiconductor led us to believe. So not only did the employees get misled a little bit, it looks like, but so did the media. Oops.
Oops. Well, that I got nowhere to go after that story. I think I'm done for the week. Jeff, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me on.
See you later.
See ya.
As always, if you have questions, comments, thoughts about the news, if you have questions, comments, or thoughts that you want to pass on to Jeff Gamet, let me know. My email is roundup@macobserver.com. And I've been hearing from more of you lately, some of the stuff that we did talking about Microsoft before, or some of the other shows that we've done, and it's always great to hear from you guys. Go ahead, send in your comments. I would love to hear what you think about what we're talking about in these context machine segments. And of course, we'll finish up with a product roundup. Apple announced the immediate availability of a 17-inch iMac configuration for the education market on Monday. The new iMac replaces the eMac and is available only through Apple education channels and costs $900. Incidentally, the education iMac apparently marks the end of the eMac and all Macs with built-in CRT displays. Clear One announced on Thursday that its Chat 50 speakerphone supports using voice commands with both Skype and iChat, and can be connected to computers, phones, and music players. It includes automatic level controls for the microphone as well as noise canceling. The Channel 50 is priced starting at $145 US. iLove has introduced the i80, which enables owners of video iPods to record video directly from an analog source to the devices. It can record in 30, 60, 120, or 180-minute blocks at 512 kilobytes per second or some other higher qualities as well. Pricing is $200 US. Flying Meat Inc. has updated its wiki and note-taking software, VoodooPad, to version 3, adding tabs, full-screen editing, palettes, and other improvements, as well as a pro version that features triggers, custom metadata pages, encryption, and a built-in web server. VoodooPad 3 sells for $30 or $10 as an upgrade. VoodooPad 3 is $50 or $20 as an upgrade for the pro version. And VoodooPad is also available in a free light version. In gaming news, Spiderweb Software on Friday announced that it will ship the latest installment in its role-playing series, Geneforge, in late 2006. Geneforge 4 will sell for $28 or $34 with a hint book. Also in this week's Slacker's Guide, Chris Baralek takes a look at Mountain Tanks by Battery Acid Games and looks at ways to play some classic quirky games from the mid-90s. And that's the news. Thanks for listening to the Weekly Roundup. Our content is written by the staff writers for the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by the servers at Cashfly, and the bass is by Boom for TMO. Remember, the Podcast Expo is coming up in September, and remember to send me email, send me thoughts, send me comments. Roundup@macobserver.com is the email address to use. Stay subscribed. Until next week, I'll see you online.